This is Barbara Ryden. Now we're back with the second half hour of the Decatur Herald and Review, dated September 18th, 2015. We'll continue with the obituaries. Gary L. Berg, 67, of Decatur, died Wednesday, September 16th, 2015. Memorial services will be held at 12 noon Saturday, September 19th, at First Church of the Nazarene, Decatur, with visitation 1 hour prior to service time at the church. Memorials may be made to the First Christian Church of the Nazarene Cracked Pots Fellowship. Brentlinger and Earl Funeral Homes, Decatur, is handling the arrangements. Charles Marion Condiff, 82, of Oriana, died Wednesday, September 16, 2015. Funeral services will be held at 10 a.m. Monday, September 21, 2015, at Brentlinger and Earl Funeral Home of Decatur, with visitation from 5 to 7 p.m. Sunday, September 20, at the funeral home. Burial will be in Friends Creek Cemetery, Argenta, with military rites conducted by the Macon County Honor Guard. Memorials may be made to the First Church of the Nazarene or Fair Havens Christian Home. Charles Douglas Miller, 69, of Fairfield Glade, Tennessee, died on September 14, 2015. In lieu of flowers, donations may be made to the Creutzfeldt-Jakob Disease, CJD, of New York. Sarah Jean Winter, 83, of Arcola, died Wednesday, September 19, 2015. Funeral services will be held at 2 p.m. on Saturday, September 19, at the Edwards Funeral Home of Arcola. Burial will be in the Arcola Cemetery. Visitation will be held 1 hour prior to the service prior to the funeral. Casual attire is appreciated. Memorials may be made to the Defenders of Wildlife in Washington, D.C. We will now turn to the editorial page and continue with a letter to the editor. All are harmed when bullying is allowed. What do you do when the people ask you to help stop bullying are ineffective in stopping it? I was bullied in grade school and it went on. Yet this is so common that the National Alliance for Safe Schools is quoted as saying, "School people often ignore bullying and they claim they don't see it. This has to stop." The Illinois State Board of Education quoted educator and author Alan Mendler, quote, "Children need to know that adults will intervene every time bullying is even suspected," end quote. And StopBullying.gov says adults should, quote, "stop bullying on the spot, intervene immediately," end quote. EyesOnBullying.org says to intervene even if you're not sure it's bullying. Bullying is so harmful that John Hoover, author, wrote, "Anti-bullying is the absolute key to community-wide violence prevention programs. I want to use what I learned about bullying to help others, so no one else has to go through what I did. I learned that education on bullying is the key to stopping bullying. I learned that bullies are not born, they are made. I learned that bullies bully because they are bullied, not because of me. I learned that bullying is a mental health issue and that the bully needs help. I learned that bystanders, either unable or unwilling to respond, are never innocent or left unharmed by the incident. I learned that everyone, the bully, target, bystander, the whole community, is harmed by bullying. I learned that only I have power over myself and the bully is powerless over me. I learned that to stop bullying, we need to constantly speak up against bullying. I learned it is never too late to stop bullying. It is never too late to speak up against bullying." Signed, Zach Wolf, age 13, Forsyth. And now for editorials. State of American Democracy. With the presidential election year fast approaching, we're in for a lot of public talk about the state of American democracy. Much of that discussion will be insightful and thought-provoking. There's a good chance you'll also find a lot of it vague and hard to pin down. There's a reason for this. Even our political leaders, the people who are most familiar with the system's workings, have a hard time describing it. In fact, they even have a hard time labeling it. Ours is not actually a pure democracy. It's more accurate to say that we live in a representative democracy. That is, the people don't themselves make decisions but delegate that authority to their elected representatives. Perhaps the best way to start thinking about what American representative democracy really means is to recall the Pledge of Allegiance, which is an oath to an ideal that our nation will strive for liberty and justice for all. Plenty of well-meaning people in the heat of the political movement seize on one or the other of those twin poles to support their agenda. They insist upon liberty or they demand justice. The pledge, however, makes it clear that these core principles are inseparable. Still, they are ideals. They are not sufficient to define a representative democracy. Indeed, no single feature does. One of our core tenets holds that the people are sovereign, that we give our consent to being governed through regular participation in the elections that decide who will represent us. Yet elections in and of themselves don't define our republic either. There are plenty of countries around the world whose elections are used to distort democracy. So the rule of law is also key, along with the notion that everyone ought to be subject to equal justice under the law. The big challenge in all of this is to set up the structures that and practices that protect and defend these beliefs. The courts, legislative bodies, and executive branches at the federal, state, and local level are an example of this, along with a system of checks and balances that promotes accountability and transparency. While representative democracy rests on a core of set principles, it remains a constantly evolving concept. Representative democracy, by its nature, is always a work in progress. We never really get the balance between liberty and justice exactly right. This is worth remembering at the moment when the problems we confront seem so overwhelming in our institutions, and our institutions are under so much strain. The problems they have to resolve, the outsized role of money in politics, excessive partisanship, the sheer complexity of the policy challenges we face are daunting. But that doesn't mean representative government itself should be called into question. In fact, it is our great strength. It protects against arbitrary authority, strives for justice, hears our varied and conflicting opinions before it acts, and moderates tensions among competing interests. It works in a measured fashion that tends over time to encourage policymakers to find consensus. It is the form of government that, when allowed to work properly, is most likely to lead to wise policy, firmly rooted in the consent of the ordinary people on whose shoulders it rests. Lee Hamilton was a member of the U.S. House of Representatives for 34 years. Key question, why do you want to be president? Once upon a time, in a twinkling city on a hill, little boys and girls were taught that anyone could grow up to become president. The children all believed it, and today many, many of them are trying to fulfill the promise. While it has been proved true that anyone really can become president, it has also been proved even more true that most shouldn't, including, sad to say, more than a few on the debate stage at the Reagan Library on Wednesday night. One wonders why these folks don't wake up each day and exclaim, "Wow, I don't have to run the country. How awesome is that?" To each his own motivation, but sane people routinely ask themselves, why would anyone want this job? We've witnessed what the office does to a person, the graying temples, deepening lines, sagging shoulders. Do the pomp, chauffeurs, chefs, private jets, and post-presidency speaking fees really compensate for the assault on one's privacy, the loss of freedom, and the terrible burden of the worldly woes? Probably. But the question, why do you want to be president, is worth asking each candidate. Why indeed? We can predict most of the answers, none of which will be remotely true. We need to make America great again, and I'm your man, seems to be a favorite. it's time to take our country back, and when I was governor, I blah, blah, blah. Or it's time for a non-politician. But for many, running for president is the next thing for them. After you've saved lives, built hotel empires, been Secretary of State or a governor, what's next? It is a fine thing to reach the summit of one's aspirations. It is a necessary thing. I suppose that some are driven to leadership and, we hope, altruistic endeavors. But governance isn't easy, and effective leadership doesn't necessarily convey to the White House from the boardroom or surgical ward or the gilded world of luxury hotels where women are cherished and the hair is real. This isn't to suggest that professional politicians are better qualified than others, necessarily, though it's likely some are. Nor is it axiomatic that distance from the political class makes someone a better choice just because he or she hasn't a clue how Washington works. Knowing nothing or having no relationships with those jobs you're hoping to lead toward productive alliances is hardly a recommendation for the job. This should go without saying and would be unnecessary were we not at this silly moment when the nation seems primed to favor the rabble-rousing purveyor of emotional potions and fantastical fixes. Billionaires have too much money, says Democratic candidate and socialist Senator Bernie Sanders. Agreed. I should be a millionaire too, but do others' billions prevent me from accruing my own? Only to the extent that their wisdom stops short of employing my talents. How many poor people is Oprah responsible for creating? Donald Trump doesn't like American cars being manufactured in other countries. What would Trump do? Slap a $35 tariff on each car and part, he exclaims to applause. But there's this little hitch called the U.S. Constitution, which gives Congress the power to levy taxes, in a small matter of the North American Free Trade Agreement, which forbids what Trump proposes. Facts don't matter, apparently, when voters are determined to evict those who have made the federal government dysfunctional. Frustration noted. But wasn't the last electoral president an outlier who was largely unqualified and had no talent for politics? But most Americans liked the way he sounded, so why not? The why not vote vexes the natural-born frowner. Often, the best leader is the reluctant one who, like George Washington, wishes he weren't the people's choice. He knows from experience the burdens of leadership and humbly recognizes that his own limitations before the task. It is duty that draws him out. We live in a different world, obviously, and the medium has become the message. The humble man times out before he can manage a quotable response. It is up to us, therefore, to listen carefully to the candidates and ask ourselves why. The answer to this question, more than the how of policy, may help you sort things out. Finally, as you tuck in your little darlings tonight, remember, your child does not need to be president. Mine does. Kathleen Parker at the Washington Post. Thumbs up, thumbs down. Thumbs up to the number of 9/11 remembrances held throughout the region last week. Especially poignant were those ceremonies held at schools to thank our first responders. Many of the children involved weren't born when the attack on our nation occurred, but it's important for them to understand its significance. Thumbs down to pesky mosquitoes spurred by rain and hot weather that are becoming quite a menace during this late summer, mostly because mosquitoes can carry the West Nile virus. To protect yourself, wear appropriate clothing, use insect repellent, and avoid being outside in the early evening when mosquitoes are at their thickest and hungriest. It is also helpful to avoid having areas of standing water in your property, which is where most mosquitoes breed. Thumbs up to area high school football coaches who are teaching new, safer ways to tackle. Football at all levels has been beset by the concerns over concussions and concussion-related injuries. Those concerns and resulting lawsuits could threaten the game at some point. But learning safer ways to tackle that avoid head injuries is great for player safety and great for the future of the game that so many enjoy. It is a wise move by coaches at all levels to teach safer methods. Thumbs up to God's Shelter of Love, which has started a retail training institute aimed at helping patrons learn skills to help make them employable. The new program will include classes taught by the Reverend Ed Bacon, director of the shelter, and then on-the-job training at Blessingdale's Thrift Shop, which is managed by Susan Bacon. The shelter is one of many charities moving into a development model to help patrons become self-sufficient. The Good Samaritan Inn offers a culinary training program, and New Life Pregnancy Centers hires clients to work in the New Life Thrift Shop. Thumbs up to Marilyn Deckert, who was introduced into the Illinois Women's Golf Association Hall of Fame. Deckert, or Detchert, has been prominent on the Decatur golf scene for decades, winning several Women City Championships and being a mentor to many golfers. She was also the women's golf coach at Millikan University for several years. Thumbs up to Payne High School football and soccer coaches, who are allowing a few athletes to participate in both sports. There are a handful of athletes at the school who want to play both soccer and football. Faced with fewer students, coaches realize that this may help both sports, so they work together to make it happen. Payne certainly isn't the only example, but it shows an appreciation by coaches that athletes may have more than one interest. Kane, podcasts all about entertainment. Tim Kane. A podcast can have any subject matter it wishes or not at all. In fact, the beauty of the art is a podcast is it exists even if no one is listening to it. A podcast is a recording of a person or people discussing whatever they wish. If there aren't millions being done now, we're not far from that number. Heck, when Jim Vorrell was here, he and I did a couple of different podcasts, and Justin Kahn and Aaron Dow now do a prep sports podcast available on heraldreview.com. The key to finding the right podcast for yourself is knowing what you want from the experience. Do you want information, comedy, profanity, silliness, intense soul-searching, some kind of combination? Would you rather hear a clean recording in a studio or a live recording so you can experience your listening with an instant reaction from others? And time. These things take time. If you're in a larger city or if you're in a vehicle or for an extensive amount of time, podcasts are a great way to kill time and be entertained. To show how the experience can cut across all ages and technologies, I download podcasts, burn the MP3 files as a data compact disc. One disc can hold 20-plus hours of material in some cases, and listen to them in my car. Hey, at least I'm not using cassette tapes. As I've sampled assorted podcasts, I've settled on a handful that are regular musts. You can find them on iTunes, SoundCloud, and most good podcasts have dedicated websites as well. Here are my go-to entertainment listens. Greg Proops, The Smartest Man in the World. I've previously waxed rhapsodic about Proops's comedic skills and the depths and breadths of his knowledge. I laugh and I learn and I think. Penn Jillette, Penn's Sunday School. My longtime appreciation of Jillette's comedy, magic, and thought process helps this one. Jillette leads a weekly discussion hitting on current events, random silliness, and behind the scenes of his fascinating career. Jillette is a veteran of working with Donald Trump on Celebrity Apprentice and has already told some comically scathing stories. For those alone, I hope Trump stays in the race. Mark Maron, WTF. I was fortunate enough to be listening to Maron before he started putting his archives behind a paywall. Maron is the master, turning each conversation with a comedian, and he's expanded to film, television, and music figures, not to mention President Barack Obama, into something somehow about Maron. In the process, he gets surprising admissions and confessions from comfortable interview subjects. How Did This Get Made? Paul Scheer, June Diane Raphael, and Jason Mantzoukas are actor-writer comedians who trash-talk about bad movies. They're generally joined by a guest, and the shows are a mix of live and studio. They've covered almost 120 movies, so there's bound to have been one you liked. The hilarity comes out about the themes they imagine the film includes, and their overreaction to the most mundane of scenes. Their breakdown on the size of the bus in Spice World is hilarious and goes on at some length. They and their guests have also perfected the art of stopping when someone else is talking. Not an easy accomplishment. It means nobody gets in as many jokes as they wish, but you get to hear every joke. The Nerdist Podcast. Comedian and omnipresent TV host Chris Hardwick may be at his best interviewing people. He has a crazy assortment of entertainers on his show, even though every once in a while they traverse down a rabbit hole that interests only the participants. At his best, he's one of the most insightful interviewers you'll hear. Enjoy your burrito. Doug Benson, the comedian and actor, may be creating a new podcast as we speak. His best is Doug Loves Movies, which has been around since 2006. It's a game show and talk show format with guests answering questions about movies. It sounds boring, but it's anything but. Benson's love of movies and knowledge of the same is apparent, as is a good sense of humor that his guests have as well. The best episode? Whenever Mark Wahlberg appears, which are also my favorite moments of any podcast. Benson also does The Benson Interruption, his one podcast that must be purchased on iTunes. Getting Doug with High, Dining with Doug and Karen, and Who Knows What's Next. If you start now, it won't take long to catch up. Dear Abby, man overcomes disabilities, but not high school prejudice. Dear Abby, today was my high school reunion. I was the most notable student for all the wrong reasons. I was born with some birth defects and learning disabilities. I overcame them, but it was hard. While working blue-collar jobs, I lived in my car for a few years. On a cold winter night several years ago, I met Dr. X in the emergency room. He was a former classmate of mine, and we pretended not to know one another. He discovered I was living in my car and heard some of my story. Then he arranged for me to be admitted to the hospital for a day so I could get warmed up and recover. When I left the hospital, I found a $100 bill in the gas tank of my van. In the gas tank door of my van. I'm sure it was from him. I now have a home of my own, and I'm doing okay considering everything. When I sent my reservation and check to the reunion committee, it was returned uncashed with a $50 bill along with the note saying, "Please don't come." The reunion was being held on the estate of Dr. X. I guess my classmates are more close-minded than I thought they would be. I was hoping age would mellow them. In addition to the reservation return, I have seen a few forwarded emails mocking my attempts to find out about the event. I hope none of those people were blessed with a child with learning or physical disabilities. I guess people never change on some things. Thankfully, I have found nicer, caring people along my journey in life, and for that, I'd like to thank all of the kind people in the world. Signed, Unexpected Success. Dear Unexpected Success, your letter shocked me. I'm glad to know how you are doing. Although people age, it's apparent that not all of them mature. In case you haven't realized it, you weren't the only student in your class with problems. People who would behave as you have described were obviously born without a heart. It is inexcusable for you to have been treated the way you were. In recognition for the challenges you have overcome, you should have been the guest of honor at the reunion. Discussing family. Dear Abby, I've been seeing a man for 15 years. I know he has 3 sisters and a brother. All he has said is they are not close and he doesn't keep in touch with them. There are no cards at holiday times, no phone calls, or any mention of any of them. There are nieces and nephews, too, and no explanation about why they don't talk. Should I be concerned that he doesn't share any of this with me? He has been very involved with my entire family, but I have never met a single relative of his. Signed, Kept in the Dark in Massachusetts. Dear Kept in the Dark, After 15 months of dating, you should be able to discuss this with him and get some honest answers. There are probably good reasons why this man and his family are estranged. They may have been abusive to him, he may be the black sheep of the family, but you will never know unless you ask directly. Now back to a new story. AT&T pioneers defined giving with free dictionaries. Decatur. Students in Carrie Sager's third grade class at Stevenson School have been sharing four dictionaries since school started. When they don't know a word, they write it on an index card and wait for me to come around and define it for them, Sager said. Now, thanks to the AT&T pioneers, each student has their own dictionary. The Pioneers are the volunteer organization of retired AT&T employees. Sager said she still has the dictionary they gave to her 5 years ago, and she looks forward to their visit every year so that each of her students will have a dictionary. The Pioneers are in their 10th year of handing out paperback dictionaries to third graders throughout Decatur and much of Macon County. A total of over 1,200 have been given out so far. If they have some left over each year, they've also provided copies to students at Kemmerer Village in Assumption, and this year, Warrensburg-Latham students received dictionaries for the first time. You're never too old to need a dictionary, Pioneer Marsha Mower said. Hopefully everyone is learning something new every day. When Mower asked what they might need a dictionary for, Hannah Stogner said to look up an unfamiliar word and see what it means. You can find out how to spell big words, Dakota Webster said. The first year the pioneers did the project, while they were looking at dictionaries and discussing their presentation, one member found the word shibboleth, which she'd never heard of before, and that word is the one they asked students to look up during the presentation. Its definition is a slogan or catchword, and Moores illustrates the meaning by asking them if they know which company is associated with various slogans, such as, I'm lovin' it, or finger lickin' good, the kids always do. She then urges them to go home after school and announce to their families that they know what McDonald's shibboleth is, so that they can show off their newfound vocabulary word. That's all we have time for the Friday, September 18th, 2015 edition of the Decatur Herald and Review. This is Barbara Ridenour. Have a great weekend, stay dry, and enjoy the cool weather coming. I look forward to reading with you again soon.